baby. Yeah.
Good morning and welcome to Wrestling with the Basics. I'm Pastor Matt Youngblood Clark. And today we have a special treat for you. We're continuing our interview with Dr. Martin Luther. And today it's a special thing, Dr. Luther, because not only is it your second interview with us, but today, November the 10th, is also your birthday.
Well, thank you. Thank you for remembering, and thank you for the cake and the ice cream. How did you know that I love chocolate cake with white icing, that was my favorite? Did Katie tell you that? Did she?
Yeah, Katie let it slip.
Did she? Oh, well,
so,
thank you.
Thank you for making time on your birthday. And this is also my son's birthday, Noah. So happy birthday, Noah. Well, shares a birthday with Dr. Luther, of all people.
We'll save a piece of cake for him. You can take that home.
Oh,
Noah. I would love to share that with him.
That'll make his day.
You know, when I was here last time, we were talking about some of the sadnesses that come in the family, certainly the disobedient children. I hope that your children, what are your two children's name again? Noah, you said?
Noah and Anna.
And Anna. Well, I hope they're always the most obedient and respectful of children, but that we don't always get that. Sometimes when they're teenagers, especially young adults, they can cause us some conflict. So it was with me and my son Hans. But as I said, those are easy to care. They don't seem easy at the time, but we just deal with love and forgiveness, trusting like that father in the parable. Remember when the son left him, how sad that was, but he just waited patiently for the son to return. It is the instances where our children will not return to us. The death of my daughter when she was just a baby, the death of Magdalena when she was 14. Those are very hard things to accept, and great sorrow they bring. But again, of course, we have that comfort of the hope of the resurrection of the dead to Jesus Christ, which I'm sure you talk about much here on Wrestling with the Basics, don't you?
We sure do, Dr. Luther.
And I'm sure that every family has their sad stories to tell. But where there is sadness, there is always the comfort of our Savior. And where the Lord bringeth down, he also lifteth up, you know. Indeed, rather than close then with the sad notes that we had last week, could I share with you a little more about Katie?
Oh, please do.
You know, often she and I didn't get along, I'll admit that. In fact, sometimes when she particularly frustrated me, I would call her Ketta instead of Katie.
Ketta?
Yes, that's the German word for chain, as an old ball and chain. But I now know upon this chain there was a beautiful jewel. A jewel so precious and valuable that I would give up all the riches of the world just to possess it. Katie was that jewel, the most precious wedding gift given by God himself. Lord, forgive me, but she was in all things so obliging and pleasing, sometimes I give more credit to Katie than to Christ, who has done so much for me. You know, God, in his grace, gave me many great works to do. I nailed the 95 Theses on the church doors at Wittenberg. I translated the Bible in the language of the people. I wrote the catechism. But you know what I think was the greatest work in the eyes of God?
What was that, Luther?
That I loved my wife and cared for my children. Indeed, my favorite writing of all time was the commentary I wrote on Galatians, which I always referred to as my Catherine von Bora. And so you see, God gives us family, whether it be mother and father, brother and sister, husband and wife, son and daughter. And where God gives family, there will be joy and love. But there will also be cross and sorrow. Both have their place and purpose. As the author of Ecclesiastes says, there is a time to weep and to rejoice. Oh, all of this reminds me of one of my favorite Bible passages.
And what is that, Luther?
Where Jesus says, take up your cross and follow me. Now, I realize that most people think that family should only be a place of laughter and happiness. We may desire that, but of course we all know that it isn't true. Why, it's right there in the wedding vows themselves. Remember what you spoke there to your wife, Lisa?
Sure.
Yeah, you pledged yourselves not only for richer, but for what?
For poorer.
Not only in health, but what?
But also in sickness.
Not only for better, but
for worse.
And so, you see, the crosses come as they will for all men. But God gives us family, so do we not carry these crosses alone. The blessing of family is that together with Christ, we bear one another's burdens. But even in Christian families, even in my family, that was not always so. There's something I discovered as I bore the various crosses that afflict our families.
And what is that, Luther?
I learned that the real problem in my family was not the troubles that beset me from outside, the poverty, the illness, or even the death.
So what was the real problem?
It was I, and how I responded to those external troubles. All we really needed to do in the face of these crosses was simply to love one another. But as I shared before, often in the face of these crosses, I found within myself anger and selfishness and doubt. And that is precisely why Jesus said, take up your crosses and follow me.
Why is that, Luther?
Because you know where he leads us, don't you, Matt? He's leading us to his cross, where he would suffer and die and give up his life precisely for sinners like myself.
And also to rise up again on the third day.
Well said, exactly. And so by following him, we learn that there is forgiveness for those of us who are not the mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers and sons and daughters that we should be. And further, we learn that for such sinful people, there is still hope. That even in death, you know, there's still the promise of forgiveness and everlasting life. And so, you see, family life is not about perfect people living the perfect life, but it's about weak, sinful people taking up their crosses and following Jesus.
Well, very good. We've come to the end of our presentation. Is there any final thing you'd like to share with us?
I hope you've seen that marriage and family are not just some accident of the world, but all of these are given to us by God to be, as I said, a schoolhouse of faith, as it were. For in our families, we learn about our sin, but in his word, we learn of his forgiveness. In families, we learn about the struggles of his world, but in his word, we learn that he will make all things work together for our good. But most of all, in our families, we learn that the wages of sin is death. But in his word, we learn that in Christ there is everlasting life and resurrection of the dead, as you said. Don't you see, if we have our families and we have his word, we have it all. We will have an opportunity in abundance to have faith in him and love for one another.
Well, thank you, Luther, and God's blessings to you and your family, and happy birthday.
Thank you, and to yours, blessings as well.
Well, Pastor Jai John Lekumsky is going to be upset that he missed that interview, but maybe he'll join us again in a few moments.
Yep, okay, yep. Oh. Nice to meet you. Thanks, Luther. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, we need to get a bigger studio, Matt. I've got to talk to the management because the studio is so small that we can get two people in here, which means that whenever you have a guest that's actually here, I mean, we can talk to people over the phone, but I can't get in, or you can't get
and
in.
And one of us
like
is missing. And yeah. Especially when you have cake in here, too, there's even less space.
Yeah, I was sitting there. Could you see the drool coming down the sides of my cheek there as I'm looking? You guys are eating the cake, and you didn't even give me.
Yeah, I think Luther ate it all.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that piece is for Noah, so I guess I better not take that one. Well, all right. I'll have to get in here, grab my piece of cake before you start doing the interview. So now, Matt, since what are we going to talk about now? We're done with the Luther interview,
it's hard to top an interview with Martin Luther, the Reformer. Let me tell you,
and to be followed by the icky, sticky, hairy, scary author Jonathan Scotti.
Yeah,
how do you follow those acts?
I know it. Oh, gee.
And the bathroom ghost. It's like, well, you know, we have nowhere to go now. Although I was thinking, we had talked about ghosts, and you tell me that you wanted to talk about a witch story.
Well,
and we
sure.
can kind of continue
yeah,
the
think,
Halloween theme.
Sure, I think this fits in kind of well. We were talking about Halloween and the ghosts and things like that. But then also with Jonathan Scotti, that author of Icky, Sticky, Hairy, Scary Bible Stories, he brought up the point that there's some icky, sticky, hairy stuff in the Bible. There's icky, yeah. sticky, hairy stuff in our world today for kids that they face, but stuff that adults face too. And so one of those accounts in the Bible that maybe isn't all that familiar to us, maybe we kind of leaves a scratch in our heads as to why this is in the Bible, is an account in 1 Samuel. And I thought we could look at that today.
Okay.
And this has
that
to do with
good.
What some call a witch, or at the very least, she's a medium. And she's from the town of Endor.
So this
is
1
Samuel chapter 28. 1 Samuel chapter 28.
And I think it's good we're doing this because this whole, you know, that's the scary thing. For people that are opposed to Halloween, I am sympathetic because Halloween does tend to emphasize the spiritism and witches and evil. But as you point out, that's also in the Bible as well. I don't think we can just pretend those stuff isn't there because there's a lot of people that actually believe in that kind of stuff.
You bet. Still today, just as much. I mean, here we see an example with Saul, and basically it's an example of what not to do.
Yes, yeah, that's right. This is not don't do this at home,
try
please.
Try this at home, yeah.
Yeah.
But here, this encounter with this witch, this medium, people like this, fortune tellers, others exist today too, and that's the reality of things. And whether they're just scamming people or whether they really are in contact with some sort of spirit, perhaps an evil spirit, We don't know, but it certainly is possible for it to be an act of evil, an act of the devil. And anyway,
all right,
just to be on guard against that, and I think we'll talk about that more and learn more about that as we read the text. But just to kind of set the scene, the background here, Saul is the king of Israel at this point, and the people demanded a king, so they get Saul.
No, by the way, excuse me, this is not the Saul in the New Testament that becomes Paul. This is the Israelite king by the same name, Saul.
Okay, very good. Yeah. Thanks for the clarification. Two different guys. So we're way back in the Old Testament. We're about the year 1000 BC or so. And first king of Israel.
It's almost as old as I am, Matt.
Almost as old as you are.
Go ahead.
Holy
cow. Oh, boy. Anyway, the people ask for this king. They get Saul. He's head and shoulders above everyone else. Things are going pretty well until Saul seems to fall away from the faith. At least that's the impression we get. Saul doesn't look to the Lord for guidance, but he looks to other places, as we see here. And
isn't that crazy? Because he was the one that God picked to be the very first king of the Israelite nation, and he starts to trust in other sources.
Wow. Oh, yeah. I mean, the Bible's just chock full of sinners, isn't it? And Saul's one of them. Fortunately, most times in the Bible, the sinners, we also see repentance and forgiveness. With Saul, I'm not so sure about Saul.
It's kind of open-ended,
Saul.
Isn't it?
Yeah. So, let's pick up with the story of Saul here, the guy who was anointed by the prophet Samuel, God's man, to appoint the next king. And here's what happens toward the end, the very end of Saul's life, as he's strayed from the Lord. So if you could pick up with verse 3 of chapter 28.
Okay. Now Samuel had died, and all Israel had mourned for him and buried him in Ramah, his own city. And Saul had put the mediums and the necromancers out of the land. So apparently at first he was doing some good stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's a good thing, right?
The Philistines assembled and came and encamped at Shunem, and Saul gathered all Israel, and they encamped at Gibeah. When Saul saw the army of the Philistines, he was afraid, and his heart trembled greatly. And when Saul inquired of the Lord did not answer him, either by dreams or by Urim or by prophets.
Stop there for a second. So Paul's got a couple problems. His first problem is the Philistines.
They are a problem.
They are a problem. They've been a thorn in the flesh.
Yeah, the Cardinals were playing the Philistines a little while ago and saw how that all
they
worked
lost.
Out.
Yeah. Went to game 7, though.
That's right. Well, we fought hard.
But those Philistines. And that's what Saul's afraid of. He's looking out on this hilltop, and he sees the Philistines everywhere. And in between him and the Philistines is a valley. A valley that's pretty good for chariots, by the way. And the Philistines, they've got the chariots. So how does Saul feel as he looks out over this?
Well, he's scared. He's scared. And he doesn't have his main man. You know, whatever he might have thought, you always had Samuel. That was the prophet of the Lord. So he was your go-to guy.
Yeah. So, exactly. He's afraid. His heart trembles greatly, the text says.
Ooh, yeah, what a graphic.
And you mentioned the second problem. The second problem is God ain't answering Saul. He's not answering him by dreams. By the Urim, that was a way of the priests be able to discern God's will. And he's not answering through a prophet like Samuel. So why doesn't Samuel answer Saul this time?
I have no idea. Why not?
Well, it's in verse 3.
Okay, verse 3. Oh, he's dead. sorry. I thought that was kind of obvious. He's dead.
But Samuel's dead, so he's not answering. And Saul is in distress. He wants an answer. He wants some word from the Lord, some word from somewhere, at least, what to do with these Philistines. And that is an interesting detail he picked up on. At some point there in verse 3, we see that he was doing something right. He kicked out the mediums and necromancers. So we're talking about people who talk to the dead or consult the dead. Saul kicked him out. So he's doing something right. All right. But let's see what Saul does in his desperation here in verse 7, if you could read that verse.
All right. Then Saul said to his servants, "Seek out for me a woman who is a medium, that I may go to her and inquire of her." And his servant said to him, "Behold, there is a medium at Endor."
Okay, thanks. So, in desperation here, With facing the Philistines, facing no clear direction, what does he do? Who does he try to consult?
Well, let's go check out the mediums before he's driven out of the land. But there might be a few laying around somewhere.
Yeah. So
that's right.
They're still there, hiding out somewhere, and sure enough, there is one.
Which you know, it reveals something about his attitude towards Samuel then. You know, because he did consult Samuel, he did rely on those, but apparently in kind of a superstitious way, didn't he? Not in the way of faith in the Lord, but as, well, okay, yeah, Samuel can contact the dead, know the future, but these mediums probably can do that too.
Oh, good, know? Good. Yeah. So yeah, he doesn't even seek out perhaps someone else who speaks for the Lord or a follower in Yahweh. He seeks this medium,
She,
like you said, she's just kind of interchangeable. She can give me the answers I want to, just as well as Samuel did.
And the scary thing is he knows better, because he had driven him out before.
Yeah.
So he knows better, but he's still in desperation. Well, something's better than nothing, rather.
You bet. And we'll see that he tries to still speak to Samuel, but yet, you know, goes about in the wrong way. Mm-hmm. So he goes to this medium. This medium is this witch, some call her, someone who can conjure up spirits in some way, someone who can speak to spirits, or the spirits perhaps speak through them. And again, you're wondering, well, what kind of spirits are we talking here?
That's the question.
You know, if this is legit, if she's really doing this, if it's not just a scam, then who are these spirits that are talking to her? And that's kind of the question here. So again, I think an example of what not to do.
Okay. All right.
And we can talk about that more. But let's see what happens here.
So don't consult mediums or spirits. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, don't consult mediums or spirits or the necromancers, as the word here is. And why not? Let's talk about that a little. Why not?
You brought it up.
Because if you're consulting them, and Saul here for the future and direction, well, then who are you not consulting?
You're not going
to the Lord, right? If we want hope for the future, if we want guidance in our lives, the place to go isn't a fortune teller or a spirit conjurer. The place to go is to the Lord, to His Word for answers, for guidance. His Word, a lamp to our feet, a light for our path. That's the place to find it. That's where our true hope is for now and for the future and for all eternity.
Well, you know, He is the Creator. He's the one that controls everything. So probably it would be better to go to Him than to go to some second
source. Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Do you need me to read on then?
If you could, let's read verses 8 through 10.
Okay. So Paul disguised himself. Why is that, Matt? Why did he disguise himself?
He disguises himself probably for a couple of reasons. One, he doesn't want to be seen by the Philistines if there's any lurking around.
Good
after
point.
All, he's the king of Israel.
Yeah.
And then the other one, he probably doesn't want to see by the Israelites. You know, I think he knows what he's doing. Probably ain't the right thing.
It's not the right thing.
But he's doing it anyway.
Okay.
So not only in disguise, but what else? Keep going.
And put on garments and went, he and two men with him. And they came to the woman by night.
By night even under cover of darkness.
Yeah, so that's kind of the same thing Jesus says when they come to seize him in the garden, isn't it? Oh, yeah, why didn't you come arrest me when I was in the temple, huh? Maybe the fact you're doing this in darkness says that this isn't a good thing.
This isn't the right thing, and they know it.
Now you're making me uncomfortable, because how many things do we do under the cover of darkness? Yeah. But anyway, Saul said, divine for me by a spirit, and bring up to me, for me, rather, whomever I shall name to you. The woman said to him, surely you know what Saul has done, how he has cut off the mediums and the necromancers from the land. So here's another reason he needs to disguise, because otherwise she might not talk to him, for he came to kill her. Why then are you laying a trap for my life to bring about my death? But Saul swore to her by the Lord. Oh, man, bringing in the Lord again. As the Lord lives, no punishment shall come upon you for this thing.
Yeah, I know. And then he brings the Lord into it, even swears by the Lord's name. So Saul, boy, messing up left and right. So what's the request that Saul has in verse 11?
Then the woman said, whom shall I bring up for you? He said, bring up Samuel for me.
Okay. So he hasn't given up on Samuel. Samuel kind of given up on Saul, it seems like. It's been chapters now since Samuel's talked to Saul, or that Saul's really consulted Samuel. And now Saul wants Samuel to do in his death what he didn't do in his life, basically. Now I want answers from him. He's desperate. So he's going to Samuel in this roundabout way, this wrong way. So what happens when this medium tries to consult Samuel, who's dead? Verses 12 through 14.
And just one quick thing. See, again, yeah. It shows that he didn't apparently see Samuel as the messenger of the Lord, because otherwise, why would you go to someone you know God has condemned to try to call up Samuel? Again, he must have kind of thought of Samuel as some kind of superstitious magician, kind of like a Merlin, the wizard. Yeah. That, yeah, you can go to him, and that's probably why Samuel gave up on him. Because he said, well, no, I'm just God's representative. It's the Lord you got to trust in, not
you
Samuel.
Bet.
Well, anyway.
You bet. Well, and a prophet, what do? They speak for the Lord. That's all they can say. A faithful prophet is what the Lord gives them to say. And it seems as though there's times in Saul's life where he really doesn't want to hear what the Lord has to say.
And that's the problem, isn't it?
Yeah. That's the problem, and that's our problem too so many times.
When the woman saw Samuel, she is that right? Verse 12, right?
Yeah, verse 12.
When the woman saw Samuel, she cried out with a loud voice. And the woman said to Saul, "Why have you deceived me? You are Saul." The king said to her, "Do not be afraid. What do you see?" And the woman said to Saul, "I see a God coming out of the earth." That's God, by the way, with a small capital G.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
wouldn't be a capital,
Thank
would it?
You.
Just a small G. "I saw God coming out of the earth." He said to her, "What is his appearance?" And she said, "An old man is coming up, and he is wrapped in a robe." And Saul knew that it was Samuel, and he bowed with his face to the ground and paid homage.
All right, so the gig is up. She knows it's Saul, yeah. King Saul that's here. And she conjures up this spirit, and at first it seems like it's only seen by the medium here. Mm-hmm, because Saul mm-hmm. asks, what does the guy look
yeah,
like?
Yeah.
So what does he look like? Well, he's coming out of the ground,
yeah,
which is bizarre.
Yeah.
And then he's wearing
an old man,
yeah. and he's wearing a robe.
Yep.
So,
yep.
of course, this has to be Samuel.
Oh, there you go. Well, sure, with that's like a... Well, maybe not.
Yeah, maybe not.
Okay.
That's the only details you get, and yeah. Saul's convinced that's enough for him.
And he did ask her to bring up Samuel, so that's what he was kind of looking for.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, that's what
Close
he would
enough.
Expect.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. So then the spirit that she conjures up has a message. So if we want to read 15 through 19,
sure.
what is this message?
Then Samuel said to Saul, "Why have you disturbed me by bringing me up?" Saul answered, I am in great distress, for the Philistines are warring against me, and God has turned away from me and answers me no more, either by prophets or by dreams. Therefore I have summoned you to tell me what I shall do." And Samuel said, "Why then do you ask me, since the Lord has turned from you and become your enemy? The Lord has done to you as he spoke by me, for the Lord has torn the kingdom out of your hand and given it to your neighbor David. Because you did not obey the voice of the Lord and did not carry out his fierce wrath against Amalek, therefore the Lord has done this thing to you this day. Moreover, the Lord will give Israel also with you into the hand of the Philistines, and tomorrow you and your sons shall be with me." Oh, that's kind of ominous, isn't it?
"You and your sons shall be, yeah,
with
listen
me.
To that.
The Lord will give the army of Israel also into the hand of the Philistines."
Yeah, so Saul does not get the news that he wants. He's going to lose the kingdom of David. They're going to lose against the Philistines. And if that ain't enough, tomorrow he's going to be with her.
This sounds like a story we're going to have to continue next week.
Well, I think
how this all works out.
And the thing to wrestle with, I think, is who is the spirit?
Ah, good question.
Is it really Samuel?
Yep,
or is
yep.
it something else?
All right, so we'll talk about when the spirit's going to come back from the dead next week and talk about how this whole thing ends with Saul as well.
All right, sounds good. We'll see you next week.